Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Pinnell, and today, March 3rd, we have Suzanne Patterson, who's going to be joining us for her discussion on HD makeup. Now, normally Suzanne calls in for like a 15-minute segment, and she gives us information about the HD cameras, and then she turns around and gives us information about HD makeup. But tonight's show is going to be all about the HD makeup. So if you have questions about which products to use or if you really think HD products are necessary, you want to know tips, you can call in and ask us tonight. So it looks like we have Suzanne joining us now. Let's see, Suzanne, hold on a second. I'm trying to get you on. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Great. And I just want to remind everyone that the call-in number is 914-803-4399. Again, that's 914-803-4399. I was just saying, Suzanne, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here. And I was just saying to everyone that, you know, people have a lot of questions about HD makeup. Normally you come on and you tell us about the HD camera, and then you give us, you know, a makeup tip. But tonight we've had a lot of people just over the past few weeks or so call or text. We have a little BlackBerry group where we share information and talk. People want to know about HD makeup, and they want to know about the products. So I figured who else to bring on but you, because that is definitely your area.
Well, it's just one artist's view, mind you.
Yes.
And I'm happy to share it.
And, you know, it's like we, you know, some of us all, we've all gotten out there and kind of worked with it a little bit, some of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somebody else may have a different perspective or a different take on it. But, you know, that's what tonight is all about, is just sharing that information. So, you know, I encourage everyone to call in and share your stories or your experiences, because, you know, you may find something different.
You bet.
What we're saying here tonight. So, Suzanne, one of the first things I want to ask, because I hear people say this, and that it's like a true or false, and I've heard people say that HD makeup can make your skin look flawless and younger. True or false?
False. Big, big, big false.
Right?
In my opinion, totally false. I mean, think about it. It's a high-resolution format. It's five times mm-hmm. the image of standard definition analog. Look at the television screen sizes. I was going to do my little technology and technique thing because I was going to talk about the latest new camera, but, you know, I can save that for next time and, you know, just go with what the format is tonight. But, you know, Panasonic has just came out the end of last year with a 153-inch screen. Is skin going to look flawless in close-ups? I don't think so. The resolution is, it's really going to show your technique. It really is going to show your technique. It's really, really going to show, you know, what you're, just how transparent or how opaque or your blending It's just going to magnify that. It's just an ugly format. It's just ugly. HD's ugly. I don't like it. I don't know. And remember, I dropped the bomb on you guys about 7980, and you know that's coming. I mean, it is really coming, and it's like I won't be in the business by then, but I hope I'll be off doing something else. But you know, in the next 6 or 7 years, that's going to be a reality. Next. In 2012, BBC is going to broadcast in 7980, a part of the Olympics. And they're going to have special screening rooms with 600-inch screens to view that. So, boy, that's over my head. I don't think I'd even want to watch it. But that is going to happen next year. So I just had HDNU, High Definition Macon University, this past weekend. And I just told my students, think 7980. We really started to look at makeup from that point of view. Now, I have a macro lens on my camera this year, so it was pretty unique to see it that tight on the skin. And believe me, even the slightest little hard edge, you know, with sponges or whatever, just showed right up. So that's just been my experience this past weekend. So just kind of putting it all out there.
Well, what about the actual products? You know, like there are different brands that have products. For instance, Cargo has the Blu-ray High Def line, and then Smashbox has an HD, you know, Healthy Effects Foundation. This one has a, you know, HD foundation. That one has an HD
well,
powder.
You all realize that they're using terms to advertise their products. I mean, I know everybody understands that. They mm-hmm. use the buzzwords. That's the way the industry is, you know, if a buzzword sells a product, they're going to use it. I don't have any idea why, you know, Blu-ray would even be associated with a makeup product.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me. The only thing that needs, you're going to have to be more of a cosmetic chemist, very simple, basic entry-level cosmetic chemistry. And there's four things that you are going to have to be really concerned about in HD, especially with your base products, and that is color, coverage, texture, and finish. I'm finding I'm becoming a big texture and finish freak. That's something that we're, you know, I said it in just kind of one sentence, summed it up for me about 7980, was that we're going to go from translucency to transparency. Because right now we're working in translucency. And that means the percentage of saturation of makeup to skin. I mean, if you think about it, back in the 70s when we were literally recreating faces with makeup. I mean, they didn't look anything like themselves when they walked on set. I mean, we were just you know, troweling it on to make them look very beautiful, to cover up. I mean, we had very low resolution. We could do all kinds of things. So probably 25% of their face showed through. 75% of it was makeup. So we had those beautiful stars of the 70s and the 80s. And then digital came on the scene, and it was like, whoa, okay. Guess we're going to have to knock it back because the resolution is a little bit sharper. So in the mid-90s, you know, things got a little more clear, so to speak, up to around the turn of the millennium, I guess is what I want to call it. You know, HD became a serious contender, started working in HD, and that was the fact that what we had to knock it back even further from standard def, from digital television. That knocked it back from about, I'd say, 40% to about 15% saturation. So a lot of the little magic things we used to do for faces just kind of went away. It's not about the flawless complexion anymore, because I don't think that if television screens keep getting bigger and bigger, it's going to be more about the clean and refined complexion. I think you need to throw away the term flawless and start doing what you can do with the very little saturation you're allowed. And it's going to be more about transparency. I told my students this weekend, you know, think, work backwards. Go back, you know, apply your makeup, work backwards to bare skin. The better the complexion, the more clean and refined it's going to be. But I just did not use the word flawless anymore. It's just, it's going to go, it's going away. And it also, you know, let's look at it from the talent side. The talent pool is going to change. It's, if you, all things being equal, and you're sitting in on a casting session, and you've got two actresses that are just identical in talent and projection, the whole deal, but it came down to skin, which one are you going to choose? The one with the better skin.
Right.
So just throwing out some thoughts here that I have.
Then,
and again,
well,
you know, it's my opinion. So.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, what do you think, though, about the products? I mean, you know, so many people out there have what they call.
You have to tear the label off. Tear the label off.
So you're saying that these particular products aren't necessarily as important as than any other product?
It goes back to those four points that I told you, color, coverage, texture, and finish. And I'm assuming that these Cargo Blu-ray, what else did you mention, powders?
Smashbox has an HD foundation. Makeup Forever has an HD powder and foundation.
Okay, well, you have to know what's in it, number one.
Okay.
And there are, for me, there are absolute definite no-nos in HD, and one of them being silicone. Silicone does not work in HD. Silicone is an oil, and it looks like a oil. It behaves like an oil. It is not a long-wearing foundation. By the end of the day, it is broken up all over the face. It has no continuity, at least the ones that I've tried. And I've tried to give it an honest, fair shake, and silicone has an inherent problem in that it is an oil. And it shows up like an oil, it can sweat like an oil, and it can add to the problem, but it just didn't have the continuity. It just doesn't have the continuity for me. As far as powders, if it's got a lot of mica and silica in it, you're going to see it because those are tiny reflector mirrors. And I think I even suggested one show back that if you really want to know how much reflection is in your powder, take some and rub it on some black construction paper or a completely opaque black fabric and take it outside in noonday sun. And if you see little tiny mirrors in there, you're going to see it on camera. Because it will, the black will reflect the reflection. It'll get picked up when you do that little test. So
okay.
My thing is that it's all about using a highly pigmented product that I can shear out to as much transparency as I need, but the available pigment is still going to be there to provide the coverage that I need. Higher the pigment, the more coverage you have in transparency. So that's just something that, you know, you're going to convert to. Liquid makeup isn't going to give you that degree of saturation to vehicle because it's a liquid. It has a limited amount of suspension it can hold in pigment, and it's usually anywhere from 17 to 22 to 23%. Whereas in the cream makeups, your thick cream makeups, you have as high as 80%, and that's what you want. But certain vehicles are not camera friendly, especially castor based, glycerin based. They kick up shine. They're very high maintenance. They go on nice, but the thing you need is you need long wearing. You need it. I've got to have sometimes things last as long as 12 hours. So that's my litmus paper right there. And some cream makeups, especially castor-based makeups, don't go on smoothly on skins that have had laser treatments, or if they've had prescription topicals like Retin-A, don't go on very well, and they don't wear very well because the skin texture is completely altered. So that's another issue in HD. You can see that.
Let me ask you, because, you know, you talk about the different cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a big difference in HD makeup for photography versus, you know, your television and your film?
I don't work in HD photography at all. I don't work in any kind of photography, so I wouldn't have a good comment on that. But I can tell you, I mean, we do have HD SLRs now that do still to video all in the same jump, and it really has to do with the lens more than anything. So if you've got a high-def lens on it, and you're shooting macro beauty, I think, you know, the same general principles are going to apply. But you might, you know, again, in editorial makeup, I mean, you're going to be going for a certain look. You know, they like the smooth, dewy kind of look. That's
right.
Me completely different. So I don't do that kind of work, so I'm not really qualified to really make any comments. I just know that there is a lot of, there's 60 megapixel devices available for still, and I think it's even higher than that now. And then you have all the HD SLRs now that will shoot both. So it just gets to the point you just can't hardly keep track of anything. So you have to adopt some kind of mainline standard that you know your work is going to pass muster in at a certain level of HD and above.
Right. I have a question. Let's see, I'm trying to pull it up here. I don't know if it's going to pull up. Look in here. Okay, because we had one of the members in the from the BBM group who had a question, and I can't pull it up here. But
what's BBM?
Let me ask.
Oh, that's your blackberry.
Yeah.
I'm the only person on the planet that doesn't have. I have a 10-year-old phone. It's terrible. I'm afraid to throw it away because it works so good. It's terrible. So,
well, we do have a caller, someone calling in, so we'll go to their question or comment. One second here. Hello.
Hello. Hi, ladies.
Hi,
Cynthia.
Hi. I don't know if you can hear me. It's kind of loud where I am. Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I had a question. You know, with the whole HD rave, and like you said, you know, a lot of companies are, you know, sticking HD on the labels, you know, and as well as claiming to have tested under HD cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But in the event of companies that are not sticking HD on the products, but yet people are still using these products, and when they get, you know, when they do a test, you know, before actually, you know, recording or what have you, it seems to work, depending on their application of the product. But let's say it's not, you know, really shimmery, it's, you know, a little bit more matte or what have you, but it's not labeled HD. How do you feel about that? Like, do you believe that it needs to be straight up HD inspected products before going on, or do you feel like you can do a trial and error?
Oh, it's all trial and error. It's definitely in the eye of the artist and what you see in the line monitor, you know, what you see on set. It's definitely your knowledge base, your technology and your technique. And, you know, I'm not going to hit so much on products that are saying that it's HD or whatever. It really is all about color, coverage, texture, and finish. And if that product really meets those four critical standards in its performance, and I'm add to that, it's got to have continuity and wear, and it's got to be stabilized in color. I mean, all those things, those are the most important things. So if the product passes all those tests in HD, then I think the artist would feel fairly confident in adding that to their kit. I'm not going to pick on brands just because they're, say, HD here or there. I'm just saying let's be more, a little more technology-oriented and a little more of a cosmetic chemist and really understand a substance applied to a surface has an end result, and, oh, by the way, it's going to be reflected and recorded. So, you know, you've got to interface through those different platforms to judge or gauge whether this product has the performance that you're looking for. I mean, not only do I want it to be color, coverage, texture, and finish, but I want continuity and wear, and I want that to last. I want this to be a 12-hour makeup that has minimal maintenance. Of course, that's a lot to ask for a lot of makeup, but I do get that with a particular brand that I use, which is why I've stuck with it for the last 6 years, because, you know, it all works for me, and I'm not going to change anything that works. And think about the fact that, you know, you have to work, you know, under time constraints. So you don't always have the time or the luxury to maintain a makeup the way you want to. So it sort of has to be amenable to the constraints and the environment that you're working in. And and don't forget, another big thing is that camera reads value and temperature exactly. So if you don't have a product line that is broken down into temperatures and correct temperatures and values, and remember, there's three skin tone temperatures. That's warm, neutral, and cool. If you go out and you take people off the street and you take 20 people off the street and you sample their temperature and values in your skin, invariably all the time, this has been a standard to me, that you're going to find 9 of these people will be warm and 8 of them will be neutral and 3 will be cool. Cool is not your prevalent undertone. And so for many, many years, artists were not recognizing that there's neutral undertones out there. Well, HD forced that issue. So now you do have to differentiate between the neutral undertone and the cool and the warm undertone, because if you put a wrong color, a wrong undertone on a wrong temperature on another temperature, you can turn it orange, you can turn it gray, you can turn it peach. There's all kinds of reactions that you get, and the camera will pick that up, and it'll skew on it, and it'll make it an obvious line of demarcation. Unless you color in everything about the person and change their temperature completely. But it does read as askew, so you need to be accurate. So you need products that give you those three choices. Or if it doesn't, then you're going to have to learn how to mix neutrals.
And that's true. I mean, I am finding that there are more companies now that are talking more about the neutral.
Right, they have to.
The red or the, you know, olive shades, or, you know, they are, because I am seeing more, you know, companies being more aware of it.
Well, it's really important because you've got cameras that have inherent atmospheres in them, and that means that a camera, for instance, Panasonic, which is, I love Panasonic cameras because they are so skin-friendly. And a lot of DPs tend to use Panasonics for green screen work because it does keep the skin on the warm side, especially with your cool tones. But then you have Sony cameras that have an inherent cold atmosphere, so that pulls hard on blue and red tones, the blue and green tones. It really can pull the face down. And then you have the red camera, which is a very neutral atmosphere. So it will have a middle baseline, but if you've matched the skin incorrectly in temperature, it will really show in a red camera. So, you know, you have all these things you have to think about. You really have to take into consideration, you know, the camera that you're going to be working with, because all, you know, JVCs are neutral, but mostly you're going to see Reds and Panasonics and Sonys. And they each have their own unique atmosphere in which they record the image in. And this is just the way that they're calibrated at the factory. Now the DP can adjust that somewhat, but Panasonics are always going to be slightly on the warm side. Sonys you have to bring up. With Reds, they have a lot more ability to change the atmosphere in a Red because it's so neutral. But you know, these are just things to know. I mean, these are things to keep, you know, tucked in the back of your technology, your knowledge in technology, because you walk on set and it's a Panasonic camera. It's going to be forgiving. So if I make a slight little mistake in matching value to skin, it's not going to be that horrible. Whereas if it was Sony, it's like, okay, I got to be dead on. You know, I got to be really good about this. So, you know, these are just my experiences that I'm sharing with you. I'm sure there's plenty of other people out there that have, you know, have a lot of different experiences to share, but this is what I run into. I hope that helps. I don't know.
We have a question from the chat room, and then we did have a caller. I don't know if they got disconnected. Maybe they'll call back. But the question from the chat room is, Megan wanted to know, can you suggest any foundations and powders for people to use who are just starting out in TV and film?
Well,
considering we have these HD cameras.
You know, without really, I guess, talking about the requirements without, you know, of course, you know, I'm a diehard Graftopian user, and that's because it is divided already into values and temperatures, so all you have to do is make sure that your skill in matching that to skin is up, so you know that you're always going to have true skin tones. And the problem that I see with a lot of other, especially the older brands, you know, that we've been using for many, many years, need an overhaul, a really big overhaul, because of this evolution in resolution. We see that these colors aren't quite exactly skin tones, and they require a lot more custom mixing to make them perform better as the way skin is read on camera. So for the ones, the person starting out, you want to find a line that offers you warm, cool, and neutral right off the bat, especially with your foundation, because it's going to make it a lot easier learning curve for you to practice with, especially when you have good lighting. So that would be my strongest recommendation. Definitely get into a line that already has that broken down, because it's going to be an easier learning curve for you. It won't be so frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing, is not frustrating, you know, beginner artists, because, you know, color theory is not an easy, it's a learned thing. As you get your hands under it and you work with it, and you work with it under different situations. So trying to make it as user-friendly as possible, I'm all for that. And even on, you know, working a lot of years that I have, I'm just so happy that I have, you know, working with a line that just makes my life easier, and it makes my work faster. You want to be able to work as fast as you can. So having products at your fingertips that allows you to work quickly and get the job done is really important, too.
Well, listen, Susan, I wanted to know, is there an experience that you could share with us where you did someone's makeup? This is for HD. You did someone's makeup, and then when you got in front of the camera and you saw them, and it just was not right. Can you tell us, like,
oh, that happened last year.
I take it you've had several, but
doesn't stop happening.
Wrong.
Are you kidding?
Well, that's true. Could you tell us what was
I don't
wrong
think
and how
ever
you...
ever stop happening? It was when I did the video HD 101, and I was way off in the brow color. I was way off in my technique, because we were shooting it with a macro lens, I could not see what the lens was looking at. And I think I shared this probably a while ago, but I was mortified. I really was, because, you know, I do a really good, I do really good brows, I thought, or so I thought. And I literally had to have the DP tell me, okay, am I going in the right direction? Am I cleaning it up here? How, you know, how's that look? He says, yeah, it's too much texture there. Yeah, wipe it off there and blah, 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 blah. And you know, I took a hit. You know, I was like, wow. So that's why I ran out and bought a macro lens for the camera, because I thought, if I'm having this experience, everybody else is going to have it that comes through class. Because it's I didn't want to make the mistakes on camera. I'd rather make it in a, you know, safe learning environment. But I had to go back and redo it. It was amazing. At the same time, I was very humbled by it. So, we had to get it right. And also, I had the cream blush just a little bit oversaturated in that macro lens. So I had to go back and clean that up.
Has there ever been a time when maybe the skin, the coloring of the skin was off?
Oh, sure. You bet.
I mean, how did you fix it without taking it off totally? Or did you have to take it off totally?
No, I didn't have to take it off. I actually cheated it with dual finish powder. But this was probably, the cameras weren't so refined as they are now. But, yeah, I would, oh, sure. I went in and just corrected it, color corrected it with some dual finish powder, which really saved my hiney on that. But, yeah, I've gotten it wrong, absolutely. Sure. Just the other day, I had a client come in, and in my studio, and I've got, you know, I'm real careful about having, you know, these lights at a certain temperature, but I was really, really having trouble finding her undertone, because she sat on what I call the cusp between neutral and cool, and that's one of the big problems that I think every makeup artist has. And I still have trouble with that, too, especially if they sit right on the cusp between, they could fall either way. And I just had to work with it and work with it. I would kept redoing it, but it ended up that she was neutral after I let it sit for about a good 5 minutes on her skin when the metabolism warmed it up. We made the correct match. But that's the hardest thing when you have people sitting on that neutral to cool cusp and you can't really read it. I attribute that because, you know, I'm older. I think my eyes are changing, so to speak. So now I wear magnifiers over 200 diopter glasses when I'm doing HD. So I mean, I'm like really magnified on the skin. But I think that's probably still going to be, you know, an issue I'm going to run into with myself. So. You have to work with it and work with it, because it's when those are the hardest people right there. When they could be on that cusp between neutral and cool. Warm and neutral, you can definitely distinguish, but when they're sitting on the cusp between neutral and cool, it gets tougher. It's a learned thing. It's a practice thing to see it. You just have to work with it. I hope that makes sense. I hope I'm explaining it.
It does.
Okay.
Does.
Good.
Let me ask you a question, because I was thinking about this. It may not be any different than anything else, but I was thinking, you know, like on the last few projects that I've worked on, I've had to do a lot of tattoo work. More so not necessarily covering them up, but actually applying tattoos, you know, using the airbrush and that kind of thing. And then I kind of want to get in a little bit with talking about the airbrush in HD as well. But are there any things in particular that we need to pay attention to when we're applying tattoos when working with HD cameras?
All right. Well, it depends on the process. Are you using markers? Are you using a tattoo transfer? It really depends on what you're using.
And after this past show, I was doing a little bit of everything, using markers, using transfers, airbrushing them on with, you know, and using stencils. It was a combination of a lot of things.
That would be a makeup test day if you could get it.
Well,
number one.
So.
Oh, I guess that was out of the question, a test day, right?
Yeah, that was out of the question.
Out of the question, okay. So did you, so in other words, this talent just showed up on set and you had to do the tattoo, or did you have just kind of a makeup session with him prior to shooting?
And this particular situation, they just.
Say, I'm sorry, I lost you. Say again.
I said, in this particular situation, it's their, when they showed up on their first day, it's like, okay, let's do this.
Well, I probably would have. Did you have access to the monitor?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. I probably would have applied a few steps, gone and checked and monitor, and I would have checked the you know, the texture and the color of how it read before I proceeded much with it. I would have just done some of my outline work before I did some of my fill-in work. See how the transfer went. It's like you really almost have to be able to have that in front of camera. And there's another, you know, another thing. I'm sorry, say again?
No, I was going to say, it was one of those situations where it's like, okay, you have to put on X number of tattoos, and it's like they already wanted them as soon as they got out of the car.
Ah.
You know,
how tight,
you know,
was,
it's one of those
how tight was the shot? How tight was the shot?
Well, they shot it from different angles. Some
things
were
tattoo.
Wide.
Was it was it
well,
tight
yeah,
on
some,
the tattoo, or was it?
In certain scenes, yes.
Hmm.
In certain scenes, yes. And you didn't know what was coming up first because of the situation where, you know how it is, like
sure.
A director, you know, says, okay, this
sure.
is what we're going to do. But when you get in there, it's something totally different.
Right, of course. Okay, but if it was me, and like I said, I was using all kinds of different ways to accomplish it, here's one of my little secret weapons. I carry with me sometimes when I'm, you know, doing some character work like that. If you go to Staples, you can get these magnifying sheets. They're like a 6x8, and
mm-hmm.
what I probably would have done is I would have been doing the work and I would have looked at it through that magnifying sheet to see how it was going to look, and then I would have knocked it all down with a lot of powder as much as I could, and then dusted the rest off so you could try to get it as much as you can under the skin looking.
Okay.
I would use the same skin tone, or I might have even, I'm just thinking off the, it's been a long time since I've done a tattoo because I've been doing so much powder puff mechanic work lately, but
mm-hmm.
I probably might have airbrushed a concealing overlay on it to make it look a little more like it was skin. There would be a few things I would have done, or maybe a combination of both of those things, and make sure that the powder was buffed down. Was it just tight? Was it, I mean, a really extreme close-up on it?
Some of them were, yes. Some of them were.
Hmm.
And then some days it was different people applying them. Like if it was a lot going on and a lot of people, because one of the scenes or part of the movie, we had a gang.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, a lot of them are going to have tattoos.
Sure.
You know, and, of course, they all are going to have the same gang tattoo, but it may be in different places, different sizes. So some days it was, you know, me and an assistant putting on tattoos. Sometimes my assistant put the tattoos on most people, you know, while I was doing other stuff, or, you know, maybe I had a chance to put one or two on. So, you know, it's like some days I saw where – the work that I did, you know, I liked it better another day than maybe the first day. You know,
oh,
what I mean?
The day
really
you liked it better,
on...
would, then I would have remembered what I did.
Right.
So If it looks great, that's the method I'm going to stick with.
Right, because every time I did it, I took pictures every time it was done, just, you know, so I could just see how it was looking. But, you know, a lot of stuff was just really, a lot of times it was just really rushed.
Sure.
You know, it's like a lot of times directors want everything, but the production doesn't give you time to deliver what they really want. So you give them what they want, but it's not necessarily as great as you would want it, you know. So,
well, rule of thumb here. The more you add in texture or different products, the more it's going to show in HD. That's the rule of thumb. So I would have tried to accomplish it with as minimal amount of product, but that gave me the color saturation that I needed. But when you start using, you know, layering different products on, you're going to get texture. You're going to get texture. You're just going to get it. So I would have probably tried to stick with one way of applying it and then maybe knocking it under the airbrush or powder or tried another one. But the less you use, the more native it's going to look.
I didn't have a
budget to call Christian Tinsley and have him make them for you, huh?
Well, that's the thing, because when I first got the call about the job, my first thought was to call him.
Uh-huh.
But there was no time, you know. But by the time they got the script to me and I read the script and I said, okay, we need all of this. But then by the time I got to Los Angeles and got right off the plane, went to the director, had a meeting with the director, and he wanted all of this great stuff. And he had all of these ideas about what the design should look like. And I'm saying to myself, okay, this is Saturday and we start on Tuesday.
I can't call anybody to do anything. Have to create the designs?
Some of them we had to create. So it was just about stenciling and getting the art department to help out a little bit. You know, it was just a mad rush.
So did you use airbrush stencils perhaps? Did that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
So some things I airbrushed using airbrush stencils. Some things
I would have done
it
in alcohol. I would have airbrushed it in alcohol based paint because that's going to be
That's what I did. That's what I
good
did. And then there were times when we had to go to the stores and just buy various transfers, just, you know, things that look like gang tattoos, because we had to have some options. And then it's, you know, all this stuff about what he
all this before
to
two
have.
All this in 3 days.
Oh yeah.
Oh
huh?
Man.
Uh-huh.
Which is why you do
and
film.
Then we worked the six day work week.
Wow.
So
it was one day off.
So it's like you had to go with what you had.
Right.
So I was just wondering, you know, like when you're doing that with HD, I'm sure that there's something that you need to be looking out for, and I made note of the comment that you made about the texture.
That's just rule of thumb. The more textures you use, the more you're going to see it. And so, you know, what's your flattest texture? What's going to result in your most flattest texture? Well, that's going to be the alcohol-based products, because that's going to just be flat on the skin, and it's going to look really very, very close. And, you know, Skin Illustrator has tattoo inks. Did you try that product? That's a really good product.
Yes, I do have those.
Okay. That would allow you to to have your main structure looking really, really nice in the tattoo. But you want to go as flat as possible, and then I would have, you know, put a layer, I would have buffed a layer of powder over it or a concealing overlay with a skin tone of an air, you know, a skin tone. And made it a very, very, very whisper light finish on it, because it will flatten it even more in the alcohol base, actually, because you're working in the same texture.
Right. Well, I will say this, you know, with so much airbrushing and using the alcohol based products, I say by day 12, my gun was jammed. I was calling Cynthia or texting Cynthia, like, help.
Were you using the airbrush all day?
Not all day, no. Just for the tattooing, and that wasn't all day.
At the end of the day,
but...
you should have soaked it out every day, every single day, because the really big downside of alcohol paint, any alcohol airbrush brand, is it builds real fast inside the tip. And it's like if you let it dry and you don't, you know, you can't, flushing and flushing and flushing is not going to get it out, because it builds up on the inside. And although, you know, you've been flushing it and cleaning it, you really do need, you should tear it down every day and soak it all out. Yeah, that would have saved you, a lot of problem. And yeah, I can see where it got jammed.
Mm-hmm.
You have too much buildup on the inside, and it just have you soaked it out since then?
Oh yeah. I mean it's cool now. I mean it's fine.
And I have airbrush guns that are dedicated only to certain vehicles. So I don't use my alcohol based guns with my glam air based guns at all. Once you start using alcohol in it, it just kind of changes the way the gun functions. It's a little rougher on the inside. I mean, the gun's fine, but I have just found over the years that, you know, I have guns that I just use only with alcohol-based, and then the ones that I used for, you know, my beauty applications. I keep them separate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know...
Well, that's just me. I mean, that's just me. I have just found that my alcohol-based guns don't perform as well as, you know, when I change them over, they don't perform as well with the beauty makeup. So I just figure that, you know, they become native, you know, the base adds a little bit of its nativeness to the inside of the working mechanics of the gun. And the same with silicone. You can never get silicone out of a gun, ever. It never rinses clean. So if you use silicone, it's best to dedicate guns to silicone only. Because it never rinses out, never. And you're using silicone cleaner to clean it, so it never becomes free of that. It always wraps itself around. You know, the seals become different because it gets into the seals. It's an oil. I mean, it's an oil-based product, so it's going to your airbrush is going to be a little different than one as if you use water-based in.
Right.
So I've got my alcohol-based airbrush guns, and then I have, you know, the ones for everything else that I use. I don't use any silicone, so my stuff's all water-based, so it's just like an either-or pile.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you said that because, I mean, I have enough compressors and enough guns that where I can kind of allocate everything
to
something. Right. I was just telling somebody, Suzanne, not that long ago, I don't remember who I was speaking to, but I was telling them how when I took your airbrush classes years ago, how I think we maybe had anywhere from 8 to 10 students in the class, and none of us had a compressor and a gun, and you provided that for the entire class. And so I was like, Suzanne had every compressor you could think of. You know, she had it there.
That's the only way to learn. You know, how are you going to get a really good learning curve? See, I'm all about the learning curve, not about branding anybody. You need that learning curve. And, you know, it was a full class. It's 8 because I only go up. 8 is a full class for me. But, you know, that's the thing. And I wanted everybody to change around and decide, because at the end of the course you had to decide, well, which system was going to work for you. You know, that was the whole point of the class, is working with the different types of compressors and getting up to the point of being able to use it at a low setting, so you know, so you could get the feel of when we did the all of the drill things. You were shooting at a higher pressure, but yet then when we were doing face work, you know, you brought it down to a lower pressure. So you could, so you're, you know, the brain is a really amazing thing because it loves sequence. So the class is kind of taught in a sequential way so that you have this learning curve when you leave that you, you know, of what the different pressures produce. And it's really important because you really have to understand the range in order to know the range that you need to apply transparency, because it's really all about transparency to opacity. That's what the airbrush is. It's a transparency to opacity tool, which gives you that extra degree that you can't get with hand applied on both ends of the spectrum, which makes it, you know, very, very versatile, especially for HD work, because you can actually take down shine without applying any detectable color, depending upon the type of airbrush makeup that you use. And I just really like my formulation to have. I use a water base that has an acrylic binder in it, because when the finish on the skin, it bends with the complexion, and it just looks really native to the skin. And I mean, I've tried. I mean, there's like, 39 brands out there. I've probably tried about 30 of them, and I just keep coming back to this one because it gives me the results that I need in camera. So, and I only work in television. I don't do any print or any other work like that. So I'm just speaking from that venue.
Uh-oh. So, speaking of the airbrush, do you feel like it's a good medium or a great medium to achieve those four things you were talking about earlier for HD, color, coverage, texture, and finish?
Yes, because it's a totally different approach to applying transparency that you can't get with hand applied. Now, does it mean it's the only way? No, it doesn't mean it's the only way, but it is a very, very handy tool, and oftentimes, when I'm doing, male makeup, you know, just hitting them very slightly with the airbrush over some anti-shine is all they need. And it looks very, very native to the skin. It looks, the complexion looks cleaner and more refined for camera, especially for HD. It's one of the tools. It's not the tool, but it's definitely an important tool that belongs in your HD skill set. It can provide a great concealing overlay over a cream foundation when you learn to work with it that way. It's extremely versatile. It's definitely a tool that will belong even more so than before. And if you get a celebrity talent, you know, that wants that, you want to be able to have that available.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's that right there. I mean, if that's a request or you have a request, you don't want to be turned down for a job simply because you can't provide, you know, that tool. And it is. It's just one of the tools in your overall brush skill arsenal. But it is a transparency to opacity tool that gives a smoother result on both ends of that spectrum than you can get with hand applied or stippling or wiping. It's just different.
Cool. Are there any other questions from the chat room? I'm just asking anyone from the chat room because we're winding down here. And I wanted to ask you, Suzanne, if you, I don't know when, I think we have someone scheduled for the next few weeks, but if you wouldn't mind coming back to kind of continue this conversation.
Sure.
There were some people in the chat room who wanted me to add some more time to the show, but I have an early call tomorrow, so I can't. But this has been a great conversation.
I'm always an open book. I want artists to be the best that they can be, and knowledge is the key to that.
Definitely. So I encourage you all, if you have questions, get them in while you can. Is there anything else, Suzanne, that you feel is important you need to share?
Lighting.
Go for it.
Pick up starts with lighting. You can't read your palettes, you can't read skin tones if you aren't at least in the same baseline temperature as color reads white light. As camera reads white light. I mean that's HD 101 right there. So make sure your light source is at least at or in the middle of full spectrum. The higher it is, the better you're going to see the true color. The better you're going to be able to read top tones and undertones. The better you're going to be able to distinguish neutral, because some artists can't see neutral. Neutral does not show up in tungsten lighting, and it doesn't show up in fluorescent lighting. You can't have that kind of a light spill on your talent because you're never going to see neutral. If you only have tungsten lighting, you're only going to see yellow because the wavelength is only the yellow and the red rays. If you're going to be in fluorescent, there's no yellow and red rays. There's only blue and green. So, again, you're not going to see neutral. You have to have the full spectrum to be able to see. And I wish I had everybody in the classroom so I could just, you know, show this to you, you know, in person. And you would see a real dramatic difference, especially, like, if you put a color temperature blue filter at 1/4 over a tungsten light, it's so dramatic to see going from the yellow light to a full spectrum light. And so if you're ever in a tungsten situation, which is, you know, that's what they largely use on set, although they're going to LEDs, a lot of production are going to LEDs now. So always ask for a 1/4 blue so you can have full spectrum light, but you've got to be able to do your makeup in at least the same light temperature that the camera white balances at. That's why they put the white card up there, it's telling the camera this is the temperature of white light, and so it readjusts its electrons at 32 to 36K. So you have to have your makeup at least in that same, you have to be seeing color in that same temperature so that if there's chroma adjustments being made in camera, you'll be able to adjust your makeup up and down. So it's really important.
Suzanne, tell me, because I know you carry your own lights with you when you
mm-hmm.
go to do makeup.
Right.
Can you tell us, someone in the chat room asked that question, can you tell us, and I know that you do sell some also.
Right, right.
Can you give them the information?
I'm sorry, you want to know what the light is, did you say?
What the light is, yeah, and I know that you sell them. If you could just give them the information where they could check that out at.
Oh, yeah, it's called the stick-up light. It's something that I put together, you know, when we first started the store. As a means, it's extremely portable. It's something you can throw in the bottom of your kit. And it is tungsten-based, but it comes with a set of CTB blue filters so that you have a 4,500K spill on your talent. And that, I determined, the reason why it's 45, a little bit higher than 32, is because it makes up for the color perception skew that a lot of makeup artists have that maybe can't read full spectrum at 32. So I kind of did this little experimental before I did that to just really see what a baseline was with a group of artists. And it turns out that 4,500K was the median temperature where everybody started to see color almost identically on the grayscale, because if when you know color has a grayscale value to it, and if you ask them to identify a color if they have a certain light spill on their eyes and they're looking at a color and you say, okay, where does that fall on the grayscale? I had artists that were like quarter step or a half step away, some were even a full step, but when I started to raise the color temperature of the light spill on the color, amazingly, they all said, oh, yeah, okay, it's right there on the grayscale, and they were like, you know, darts almost right there. So I thought, okay, 45 is definitely going to put everybody on the same wavelength as far as being able to decipher color. And that's important for you to be able to gauge value and temperature on the skin. So really, that's to everyone's advantage. You know, when you go on set, you're not always going to be able to get the light of your choice. And a lot of times they'll just throw you a tungsten light and say, here you go. Well, you're at an extreme disadvantage on an HD set. You need to ask them, well, can I have a quarter blue, please? And then you'll see the differences, and it raises the color temperature up from, I think tungsten is rated around 3,000, so it's below full spectrum. So, you know, that's just what I found, and that's what has worked really well, and it's just been a big seller for us. I mean, you know, you got to have the tools. You got to have the tools. And to me, your makeup kit means your chair, your case, and your light. It's not just
right.
Your chair and your case. You got to bring your light. And when you do that, and I'm telling you, you'll start getting a little bit of respect from the lighting people, because, you know, when you're standing there and you're putting your light up, and they're going to say, okay, she understands, you know, color temperature. She understands full spectrum. And so they're going to respect you a little bit more because you're working in their same realm. You're kind of speaking their language. And that's important. It is important.
Absolutely.
Whatever we can do to gain respect, so.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. I really appreciate you being on tonight.
Oh, it's all my pleasure. I love talking with people and sharing, and it is. It's just that the HD is just changing so fast. I mean, I was going
right.
to give you this thing about the brand new Panasonic, and we'll do it next time. I'll share this with
okay.
you. But we just had a big thing happen last month with Panasonic's new camera, which rolled out, and it just made just about every camera in use obsolete. So we'll hit on that next time.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll be looking
All right.
forward to it.
All right.
Thank you so much,
Thank
everybody,
you.
For joining us tonight.
You all. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.